This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Anthony Willis, and it's so nice to have a chance to catch up with you and talk about your soundtrack for Knack 2.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's so good to be here.
Now, I know you've been asked a lot about the differences between writing for films, because your credits are just amazing, your film credits, Birth of a Nation and How to Train Your Dragon 2 and Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. But since Knack 2 is your first game, what were some of the surprises, things that you weren't expecting in the process of writing music for a game?
Gosh, I have asked this question a lot. In many ways, I think what took me by surprise is how similar writing for the game was. I was very much brought onto this one to bring something of a kind of animated movie feel to the game. That's sort of how my involvement in the project started. Every project, you want to approach it by coming up with a sound that you feel really supports the world and bringing your best work to it. So in terms of coming up with musical ideas, I mean, it's really very similar. This is more of a kind of classic score with themes than like an electronic or hybrid score. But I found it surprisingly similar. What was a big difference is when you're working on a film, you generally get a whole assembly of the film pretty early on. And from there, you can start to prescribe what you're going to need, and together with the director and producers, figure out what's actually needed to kind of, in terms of the musical language, you know, what's the main theme going to be? Where do we need it? What other themes do we need? Whereas with the game, you tend to get it a little bit more piecemeal. You know, hey, we've got some scenes and levels for you to score. And you're like, great. And then you get the, and you realize that that was like, that was like the most important part of the game. That's a little unfair to the game developers, because actually, they'll tell you, I mean, they'll say, oh, yeah, this is the moment, and we'd really like you to do this. But it's harder to kind of forecast that whole experience and kind of balance it and think, okay, well, you know, where are we going to really push and where are we going to hold back? But in many ways, I mean, the experience of playing a game is different. You know, a player isn't going to sit and play it all in one setting. So I think that there's less need to worry about the linear experience, as it were.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And so many games now have branching storylines and lots of possibilities for things that the player can do. And so that, I would imagine, gives you as a composer a fair amount of freedom, although clearly you have to get some of the pieces of music nailed down. And you mentioned how cinematic Knack 2 is, and I was really struck by that. I mean, right from the very opening, it really does feel like you're watching a movie. So when you were in these talks with the developers the very first time, was that, even though there may not have been much beyond concept art and maybe a few levels kind of sketched out, was that one of the primary goals that they had for you, was to write really cinematic-sounding music?
Yeah, I think they wanted to kind of reinvigorate the franchise from the first installment and give it an added level of, as you say, feel and sort of make it larger than life, give it a little bit more finesse than the first game had musically.
Were there any legacy themes that you brought back from the first game?
Actually, no. I was really invited to kind of build the score from the ground up. But there were certain kind of orchestrational things, some of the dark brass swells and things like that, that the director really liked from the first game. So you definitely kind of nod to those and where it was needed.
I love your orchestration because it really reflects all the different areas where you go as a player and where the story takes you. There are jungle ruins and then some really cool urban settings. And as you were working out what to do with the music, how did you kind of settle on those palettes?
Well, thank you very much. That was actually really the most fun part of the game. With the cinematics, by which I mean the cutscenes, generally those were sort of focused on the story and the emotion and the kind of overall heroic theme of Knack. But when it came to the actual gameplay levels, that was when we sort of focused more on location. So, you know, bringing those locations to life. Sony PlayStation have a wonderful music department who are really passionate, and they very much sort of guided, hey, why don't we try this, you know, for the monks, let's try some sort of tube and bells and things like that to sort of really bring those different environments to life. So they were really supportive and helped guide that process.
Yeah, and the palette is so interesting because you brought in some kind of world instruments too. In particular, the track, the martial arts training, there's a shakuhachi flute that really gives it kind of an Asian feel, which is really cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I really enjoyed those different worlds. And, you know, I also like the kind of more deserty, arid areas. What's challenging about those is you don't want to kind of hit them too on the nose and be a little cliche with it. But you also you want to make sure that it does, like, elicit that feeling and takes people to that place. You don't want to be too kind of lukewarm in your execution. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and what's cool about it is, you know, just having one sort of world instrument in one of the cues, you've got a really cool Middle Eastern sounding instrument that just gives it that, like, a real sense of place, which is very cool.
Oh, nice. It might be the Tagan Desert.
Yes.
Or it might be Badlands.
Yeah, I think it's the Tagan Ruins, maybe.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a really fun track. That was actually one of the first written for the game early on, actually. Gosh, it was, I'm losing track of years, but it was about 2 years ago that I started on the game and wrote the main theme. And that was one of the first gameplay tracks that was written. So that was a fun one because it was a chance to do a gameplay variation on the theme. So you get the theme on the Duduk, which is a quite commonly used since, like, Jerry Goldsmith, and he sort of brought that into the focus of being like a, to associate with the Middle East. And it's been used quite a lot, but it's incredibly effective and a beautiful, beautiful instrument. It starts on that and then it goes to the cello, and it's a sort of smaller scale statement of the main theme of the game.
Yeah, and it works so well, and it makes an interesting blend of Middle Eastern and Western instruments, which, as we can see, really can play together nicely, which is fantastic. You've had the opportunity to work with some really well-known film composers like Henry Jackman and Harry Gregson-Williams, and I'm wondering if there are any things you've picked up from them that helped you work on this score as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've been really lucky since I moved over to the U.S. in 2011. Was it 2010? Gosh, it's all a blur. 2010, I think, actually. I went to USC and did a really great program that's quite well known called, well, it was called at the time, Scoring for Motion Pictures and Television. It's now called Screen Scoring, I think, because they've realized that it's a bit exclusive to just talk about films and television because it doesn't feature games and everything else that we are now able to turn our hats to. Through that program, I met Harry Gregson-Williams, who's amazing, amazing composer, but also a really passionate teacher. And he did a really cool forum with our class. And through that, I got to write some cues, and I think he was the only composer the whole year that actually had us do two cues from the same film, which is so important to the work. Coming up with an idea and then trying to organically develop it over a larger space is really what's been vital to the work I've done for some of these bigger composers. So that was an amazing assignment in itself. And it was one of those moments you're like, look, if I can't do a good job with this, I may as well pack my bags, because Harry was somebody that I really looked up to. I mean, he'd actually been the musical director of a group in London that my sisters were involved in when I was younger, and I could never partake in it because I was away at boarding school, actually, as a chorister. But Harry and I had a similar background as choristers, so I'd always really looked up to him, always really liked his work. So I was like, look, if I can't nail this, what's the point? So I did, and to my absolute joy, I remember sitting on the floor of his studio and him saying, oh, let me look through my list. Oh, he did a, Anthony, he did a good job with this one, and, you know, played it to the class. And I just thought, wow, like, there's a moment I'll never forget. And you need those moments to give you confidence as you move forward.
Yeah.
So then he offered me to do some interning for him, and that was amazing. And I was doing some piano arrangements of his music, and then actually offered me to get a room at the studio and start working. I thought, oh my God, this is too good to be true. I'm 1 year in. I'm getting to his Shrek scores and stuff like that, and always been real favorites of mine, and Narnia and everything like that. So I thought, oh my gosh, this is great. And actually then he decided at that moment to take a sabbatical and shut his whole studio down, which is an amazing place in Venice called Wavecrest Music. And then, so I thought, okay, well, I knew that it was a little bit too easy. He was very, very gracious about it, and he came and explained it to me and said, look, you know, I'd really love to have you on board when I get back, but to be honest, I've got to do this for my life, and blah, blah, blah. And he's absolutely right. I think it was an amazing thing he did. And so I then went to work at Remote Control, where I worked for Hato Pereira, who was really interesting because I got to work on Despicable Me 2, which was sort of the first big film I'd really written music on. And then through that, I met John Powell, who completely changed my life, gave me a confidence that I could write in a way that I didn't realize I could. He's an absolutely brilliant composer, as I'm sure you know.
Mm-hmm.
And his Adetranian Dragon 1 score was like one of the most beautiful scores of the last decade, for sure. Yeah, he really kind of took me under his wing, and he has a modesty to him that's just really something to learn from, because you think these guys are just going to be very full of themselves, but actually the really good ones are incredibly humble. And so as a person, I also learn a lot from John. To any kind of aspiring composers who are out there, I think just to keep your standards high and keep writing and listen a lot and be imaginative. I mean, it took me, and I'm still, by the way, seriously learning. It's a long road ahead, but it took me quite a long time when I was younger. I was thinking, well, how am I ever going to be like, well, I want to do this, or, you know, how am I going to sort of start sounding like me? And I'm not necessarily sure that I'm there yet, but the more you write, the more you sort of start to learn, oh, okay, I really like what they did there for them, but I'm going to go this way. That appeals to me. That sort of collection of favorites, or some people said like fetishes, will, you know, lead you to do something that is just you. And that's a really cool feeling. It takes a lot of sort of having tried out and experimenting different things to know what you like and what makes you, you. So anyway, to fast forward. Sorry, very long story. That really was a turning point in my career.
Well, I just think it's so interesting that, at least as far as music is concerned, learning the craft and learning the art hasn't really changed in centuries, because there's no substitute for studying with a master. I mean, there are other professions where you can learn a lot online and stuff, but at least as far as music is concerned and composing, you really just get that extra something from an actual composer who's already done what you want to do and can help you learn how to do it better.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're coming into it in the best case scenario. I mean, coming onto How to Train Your Dragon 2, you're working on scenes with the best execution. I mean, the most beautiful animation and most wonderful storytelling, the most beautiful musicians who are going to play it, and the best mixes. So you're really getting a chance to be in the best case scenario, which is difficult then when you come to your own projects that have lower budgets and you have to try and aspire to that same quality without perhaps a product that is as fantastic and the actual budget to execute it. But it's amazing to actually learn on those projects that at an earlier point in your career you're just not going to be in the running for. And actually, it's a real chance to put in those 10,000 hours or, you know, 100,000 hours probably.
Yeah.
Writing cues, doing arrangements, really trying to push the envelope on what you can achieve.
Yeah. And clearly you're really comfortable writing for films. So what was it that made you want to try your hand at writing a game soundtrack?
Well, I mean, I think as we briefly talked about at the beginning of our conversation, I mean, I think that the following that game music has is just amazing. it's a growing medium. It's growing so fast. Games, as I mentioned, like with How to Train Your Dragon, it gives you the chance to really write great music. Games really give you a chance to do something fun. A lot of dramas and contemporary things, generally music's a little bit more constrained, which has its own beauty to it and grace. I really enjoy that too. But games are kind of have an endless possibilities, really. So it was something I was looking to get into for a long time. This project came along, and I think the developers liked my reel, and they asked me to write a custom demo, and that was it.
That's really cool. And I'm sure you expected it to be a challenge, but what were some of the things that maybe you weren't expecting along the way? I'm just wondering what maybe the biggest surprise was in the whole process.
What was I not expecting? Gosh, every project has its challenges. With a game, what's perhaps hard, and this is my first game, as you said, so it might well be very different on the next one, but there's a lot of people involved. There's the director, there's the audio team, there's music supervisors. You have a similar structure in film, but it's generally a little bit more of a pyramid weighted towards the director, with the producers kind of very much on the wings, making sure that they're getting the score that they want. But with this, it was quite a lot of cooks. You're sort of learning to interact with all these people and make sure that they're all kind of comfortable at the same time, which that was definitely a little unexpected.
Yeah, I'll bet. And I've heard from other composers, too, that their original pitch or their original demo isn't exactly how the music ended up. So it can go through a lot of iterations before everybody's
absolutely
happy.
And, you know, I think the original, as we talked at the beginning of the conversation, the original goal to kind of really, I mean, the original pitch was to make the game like a Pixar animated movie. And after writing, you know, about 30, 40 minutes, the director sort of weighed in and thought, well, I kind of missed the darkness and actually even the simplicity of the original score, which was not alarming, but a little concerning just because you've been brought on with a mandate to kind of go in a different direction. So you think, okay, well, let's try and infuse that back in and still carry on with the marching orders that I got when I started the game.
Yeah, and the story is interesting because it is, on one level, it's a very dark story. I mean, there's a really terrible thing going on, and it's like saving the world. And yet, the gameplay and the dialogue has a kind of a lighthearted quality. So it must have been kind of difficult to balance both of those.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's always challenging, I think, for games and films that are targeting this particular age group and market to make them appealing and a little bit adult for that age group, but not so much that it pushes it out of that target. I definitely had experienced some situations like that on some of the animated films I've worked on. You know, I mean, How to Train Your Dragon 2 is incredibly dark, but if we scored it as dark as it as it actually visually is, I mean, you could have a pretty horrifying experience. Some of the themes that are brought up in that are actually really quite grown up. So, you know, with Knack 2, I mean, it's similar sort of destruction of the world. It's an incredibly bleak prospect, but how you actually handle that and support that musically can sort of turn it too much in that direction or not enough. So it's always interesting to be in that situation. And then after the fact, you know, hopefully you've got it just right and you go, okay, well, yeah, actually that totally makes sense. I was worried that this was going to seem a little soft for what we're experiencing, but actually it sort of finds that middle ground.
Yeah, it really does. And I'm wondering, because I was going to ask you this, how often did you get to see your music implemented in the game? I mean, did they send you builds so that you could see how it was all fitting together?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to have been involved more in that process. Sony have a really wonderful team who do that, and there's a lot of demands about how that works from the audio team, which I think as a composer, when you're trying to write your best music, you get very bogged down in that. But they did send me sort of assemblies and to show me how they were using it, and most composers are sort of control freaks, so it's always, you know, a little difficult. You know, that phase you think, oh my God, what if you're just going to have the shaker on its own and nothing else is happening, and like one harp arpeggio or something. But ultimately, I mean, I think that people experience music differently to the way that our vision for it is. I mean, especially when there's so many elements that are happening. There's a lot of sound effects and there's a lot of gameplay, and you're also, Knack is quite a procedural game in that you're sort of solving puzzles and mysteries and uncovering things. So there's that pensive thinking as well. So there's a lot of room to kind of have repetition and something looping, and that I really enjoyed watching that process unfold.
Yeah, I'll bet. And it must have been fun to see the game in its various stages. And then when it's finally done and all the music is implemented and stuff, that must have been a really great feeling.
Yeah. And actually, I mean, one thing I was really impressed with was, I think I wrote about 50 to 60 minutes of music for the cutscenes, cinematics.
Wow.
So those were custom scored. But in actual fact, there's about at least double that in the game, if not maybe 3 hours of cutscene content. So a lot of editorial happens. I mean, I might get in trouble for saying this, but I think it's actually a testament to how wonderful the music department are, that you build a score with all these themes and all these different orchestrations and arrangements, and they find a way to thread it and weave it through the game in a very creative way, which it's just not practical to custom score every single one of those hours and to record it and to produce it and mix it. I mean, it's just, I'm pretty confident that all games operate like that, and as a result are able to bring a really great production value to the music and record with live orchestras. And that's something that I've been really impressed with the gaming community. That's something that's really prioritized.
Yeah, definitely. I just had a neat conversation with a member of the Nashville Scoring Orchestra. She's one of the violinists. I don't think she was working on Knack 2, but she was talking about how sometimes they do pickups just from 4 or 8 measures at a time. And I was just wondering, as you were recording the Knack 2 soundtrack, if you noticed any differences between recording a game soundtrack versus recording something for a film.
Yeah, that's a really great question, actually. Yes, absolutely. I think you definitely record with a little bit more separation. I wouldn't say we did sort of 4 bars at a time, but we definitely did a degree of separation. Some of it was sort of almost a practical thing. We were recording with a slightly smaller string section. So we'd do like another pass for short strings or another pass for long strings or harmonics, things like that. But really, the advantage of those is from an editorial point of view that, you know, as I mentioned, you can reuse that material in variations, and it gives the game makers that control of all the elements. It's a very rare thing, in my experience, that you're in the booth at a scoring stage and they press record and everything is happening and everything sounds like a finished product. There's always an element of make-believe and editorial that goes into actually bringing it to feel like that spontaneous experience, as if someone has just pressed play. Obviously, John Williams is the master of that. And, you know, there are a couple of composers that do work in that way, and I certainly would love to work in that way whenever it's practical. But there's also an advantage to having that control and maybe having brass separate so you can balance things. And again, not as a concert, but as actually a piece of media that needs to obey other, obey is a bit of a strong word for it, but they need to fall in line with other things, with sound effects, with dialogue, with all of those other elements.
Yeah, it sounds like a key concept is to not think of it as a concert piece, but just as, yeah, as you say, as another piece of the audio puzzle, let's say, that goes into a game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think for the right game or the right film, having everyone there in the room, you're going to be able to create something that reaches a sort of level of art that you wouldn't do if you kind of pieced it together. That's, I think, more of an exceptional situation.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, it's a real testament to the work that you do as a composer and the performers, that when you do hear the cues, not in the game, just as listening on your phone or whatever, they do sound like concert pieces. So there's clearly a real talent there to make it just go beyond the game.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, I think sometimes when you're writing a cue, it's possible to sort of do less. And sometimes that's actually really is in the best interest of the game. I mean, I think we get the film we get. We go slightly into soundtrack mode sometimes thinking, oh, but, you know, people are going to like listening to this track and kind of thinking in a sort of circular way. But at the same time, I think if you don't think a little bit like that and how you can make the music more impactful, you're perhaps missing the potential to do something really great. Which is something I've learned from composers I've worked with, is to really try and write music away from the product. You know, come up with themes, because then you'll go further than just perhaps just the bare minimum for the scene, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Remember Henry Jackman telling me, you know, if you just sort of score the scene, you might just sort of do a trem and then a harmonic and then, you know, some bass pitches. And actually, you know, that might be great. But maybe there was a really cool variation of the theme that you could do in there that's of a different scale and just sort of spread out amongst the orchestra. And then suddenly you've got something that in itself is just incredibly artful. And actually, you're being more selective with your information. You're giving the audience something that's being kind of finessed into a more specific language than just generic scoring. And I think that that's somewhere that we're really moving. I think that music that sounds like film music and music that sounds like game music is actually perhaps a disservice to the product. You want to create something unique for that product.
Yeah, and that's definitely the direction that game music is moving in for sure, because it seems like this is a great time to be a game composer. There's a lot of latitude, and every game demands a really unique soundtrack. So
yeah.
I think it was a great time for you to jump in. And I'm wondering if this experience was enough to make you want to take another crack at it.
Absolutely. I'd love to. I mean, this game is more in a kind of classic adventure genre, but I'd love to turn my hand to many more games. If people have me, I think that would be a lot of fun. You get to write a lot of music, which is really great. You know, so often you do a film and there's just not really the opportunity to do the kind of musical variations that you want to do. But on a game, you're living with these themes and these ideas for really a good at least 6 months. And you can really develop them. As you said, the gamers kind of live with that music and they get really excited about it.
Yeah, for sure. Anthony, it's been so much fun to get to know you and find out about the process of NAC 2. And thank you so much for being on the program.
Well, thank you, Kate, so much for having me.
There's more information about NAC 2 and a track list for this episode on my website, respawnshow.com. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at respawnshow. Thanks to Peter Babinski for producing this episode. And thanks for listening.